Hey, everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody, I just got off the stage at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. A speech you do not want to miss. We talk about current affairs, our country, and so much more. If you want to support our program and the work we are doing to reach millions of young people, go to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. If you want to help us in our mission to reach young people all across the country, email us your questions. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
But you guys have heard me talk about Relief Factor before. Relief Factor at relieffactor.com. They do an amazing job. The Talbots who run Relief Factor are totally amazing. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. That's one of the reasons I like taking it. And ever since I started to take Relief Factor, I started to see substantial differences in my mobility, my movement, and my ability to do basic tasks. I travel the country, as you know, from Missouri to Oklahoma to Tennessee to Kentucky, Idaho, Dallas, Vegas, California. And I'm only able to do it because I have that extra spring in my step thanks to the 100% drug-free supplement, Relief Factor, at relieffactor.com. So check it out right now at relieffactor.com. I think you'll really enjoy it. The quick start is less than a dollar a day at relieffactor.com. I really think you're going to get a lot out of it.
It's great to be here in person. Am I right? It's terrific. And I want to thank the Ahern here for opening up this wonderful facility. Who would have ever thought it would be difficult to have an event right now? The lockdown should have ended a long time ago. We're going to talk about that tonight. I want to thank our amazing purple shirt freedom lovers. These young people, and we're going to go through this tonight, but if you really want to look at who is fighting for freedom and liberty where the cost is very high, it's young people like our members at Turning Point USA every single day. It is harder than ever to be a conservative in our country, and it's especially hard to be a young conservative, especially on a college campus like some nearby. But UNLV is okay. I don't know. You guys can tell me if it's okay or not. But it's amazing what you guys are doing, and I want to just say that they're under attack. They get called names. Many of them put their social status at risk. They put their friendships at risk, all to be here and to help organize this event. And so I hope that you understand that takes a lot of courage, and courage is lacking in our country right now. It really is. There's a lot I want to get to, and I also want to spend extra time on questions tonight because that's the most fun. And I feel like the last couple events, we haven't had as much time as I would like there. But I want to talk about less about kind of big picture ideas to begin with, and more just about what's happening in the news cycle, because the last 4 or 5 days, there's been some things that have happened that are beyond disturbing and a big warning sign for those of us that love our country of exactly who's in charge of our country right now. And if you're like me, I believe that voter reform and voting reform, I should say, is long overdue, especially in states like Georgia. And so on our podcast, and I appreciate those of you that listen to our podcast and our radio show, we're on 3 hours here. I don't know the numbers. I think it's AM. Is it 670? Is it 790? 790. Then 790. You can hear me every day for 3 hours. I apologize. I have to know all the call signs of every market across the country. So I'm still learning it. We've only been doing radio for about 6 months. And I talked about this on the radio program and the podcast, and those of you that have been listening know this, is that we've been following all the voter integrity bills across the country, and we've been following what's happening in Georgia. And what was being debated and eventually got signed into law in Georgia was a very average voting reform bill. Quite honestly, it's not very controversial. It shortens the Senate primary from 9 weeks to 5 weeks. It requires you to prove who you are when you send in a mail-in absentee ballot. What a concept, right? That you must prove your identity through any means that you could possibly imagine. Multiple are given to you, paid for by the taxpayer. And it still allows you to give out water when people go vote. Never knew that voting was such a dehydrating exercise, as if it was running a marathon or going through Navy SEALs training. You could bring your own water, too. It says in the bill that water receptacles are allowed. It's just an outright lie by our current president, where he said that giving water is illegal. He's lying to you. And even the Washington Post said it was for Pinocchios. And that says something when they come out and say that. And so the bill was okay. I'd give it like a 5 out of 10. I'm glad they passed it. And the response, even for those of us that follow the media and these activist groups, was shocking. And the response was they went immediately to the highest level of outrage imaginable, where the president decided to declare economic warfare on a state in our country. So just so you understand, Joe Biden decided to put more economic pressure on a black county in Fulton County, Georgia, than on Iran. That's where we're at. There has been more economic damage done to our own people than to a foreign adversary. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Major League Baseball threatened to move the All-Star game. And I'm a baseball fan, or at least I used to be, because I'm not really interested in watching an entire organization that doesn't reflect my values and, in fact, is at war with my values. So have fun. I guess you're the pastime or used to be. And if you want to watch baseball, fine. I'm not going to waste my time. And I'm not going to tell you to stop doing it. I'm not going to do what the left does and be like, we must go and demand, like, just make your own choices. I tried to watch an inning of a baseball game. I said, you know what? The people in charge of this entire exercise don't share my values. In fact, they're at war with my values. So have a nice life. That's my message to Major League Baseball. Good luck. When 75 million people stop watching baseball, we're going to see how that actually ends up working. And so I've been to Wrigley Field many times. Any Chicagoans around here? Chicagoans? Awesome. Good luck going to Wrigley Field to the will call ticket and come up and say, I have first base tickets front row. They say, okay, can you show some identification? Every Major League Baseball stadium across the country, go to will call tickets, they're going to ask for some identification. But now we have to be lectured by the head of Major League Baseball that you're a bad person if you dare demand that you verify your identity with a deluge of 1.2 million absentee ballots in Georgia. And by the way, they don't even require ID for most in-person voting in Georgia. No, we're just talking about mail-in absentee balloting. And so Major League Baseball then decides to actually make good on their promise. They were pressured by Joe Biden, the economic warfare general himself, who decides to put more pressure on his own citizens to suffer than our foreign adversaries. I want you to think about how just demented that is. And I use that word intentionally. That you have a president that actually wants American citizens to suffer because he doesn't like a voting reform package that is passed. And he doubled down today, and we'll get to that in a second. And then you have Delta Airlines come out. And I remember, I just got done with my podcast, and one of our team members came up to me. They said, Delta issued a statement. I said, so what? They're an airline. Who cares? They said, well, they have this long, scathing statement. And this guy, the CEO, I want to get his name right, Ed Bastian, comes out. Have you seen this video? It's like a hostage situation, right? His eyes are wide open. He just keeps on repeating the same thing over and over again. This bill does not reflect our values. Like, you mean the value to board a Delta airline flight with an identification? You mean that value? Like, good luck working for Delta without proving your ID, who you are. And he just keeps on repeating it. And then Coca-Cola, which is also headquartered in Georgia, comes out. James Quincy, a foreign national who's running the company of Coca-Cola, comes out and says over and over and over the same thing, because some HR department intern, you know, who's like 28 years old and graduated from some ridiculous university, just wrote this for them. He doesn't even know what's in the bill. Says, this is terrible. It does not reflect our values. What exactly about the bill does not reflect your values? And so then Major League Baseball says, okay, we're going to make good on our promise. So they go from a county that is 62% black to a county that is 12% black in Denver, mostly upper middle class white, removing $100 million stimulus to black-owned businesses in downtown Georgia to go fight systemic racism. It's not about that. We all know that's not the case. These people are frauds, and it's time that we start calling them that. They don't care about that stuff. They don't care about it. They never met. And what's really going on here, and this is the point that needs to be repeated, is that they're trying to make a public example. This is political deterrence. This is all this is. What they're trying to say, and they're trying to make it hurt, they're trying to say, if you try to reform your voter laws, if you try to fix the mess that we were able to benefit from, we are going to send the political enforcement squad after you. And in a very bizarre turn of events, that's now corporate America. That's the people that literally the Delta mission statement is taking people from one location to the other safely and securely. They're not a political commenting organization, but now they feel the need to weigh in on this. And this is part of the playbook of the left, which is take over functioning pre-existing institutions and use them for our own purpose. And Coca-Cola, the mission statement of Coca-Cola is very simple. Give as many people diabetes as possible. Like, that's basically what they do, right? And by the way, you should stop drinking that garbage anyway, whether or not they share your values. Drink water, tea, and coffee. Your life will be a lot better. I mean that, seriously. And if you drink it, fine, just whatever. It's your own choice, I guess. But then you have a guy that has to lecture you about how bad of a person you are because you want to make sure that your elections are safe. And so what's really going on here, and I want to reinforce this point, and this goes back to how the neoconservatives view foreign policy. You guys might have learned, or maybe not, I don't even know if they teach this, I don't know what they teach anymore. Domino theory, do you guys know what that is? It was a belief back in the 1960s and 70s that you must stop communism in one country or else it's going to spread to more countries. And I'm not going to take a position on that either way. I think it's probably flawed, and it got us into the Vietnam War, which I think was far too prolonged and protracted and probably a geopolitical mistake. That's not why I'm here tonight to talk about the Vietnam War, and I'm open to be corrected on that. The point is that the same theory that drove them for foreign intervention on domino theory, they're worried that all of a sudden Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada are going to start reforming their elections. That's what they're worried about. And so they immediately ratchet up the intensity and they say, we have to make this hurt and we have to call this Jim Crow on steroids. And let me be very clear. That is one of the most insulting statements for the people that actually lived under Jim Crow that had to fight to end Jim Crow in America. It's so unbelievably insulting to compare that to it. But and we're getting smart to this. I have to give the conservative movement credit, which I know many of you would consider yourself part of it. We're not falling to this nonsense anymore. Do you notice that finally on television, we have people that, without wavering an inch, believe that the bill didn't go far enough and were able to push back against it? But unfortunately, we don't control the channels of communication, majority of them. I'm going to get to that in a second. But I want to reinforce one point here. I want you to think deeply about this, that the Republican Party, and I'm not taking a position on Republican versus Democrat tonight. We're a nonprofit, and we're just here to talk about ideas and the best way to move the country forward ideologically. But this is a fact that the Republican Party carried the water for corporate America the last 20 years. That's a fact, right? And you could clap, you could boo, whatever. It's just a fact, right? And Mitch McConnell in particular did whatever they wanted. Cut their corporate taxes, deregulated them. And generally, I'm in agreement with that. Generally, I think they went way too far when they had the apparatus of power of the Congress and the Senate and the White House. Their big picture idea is, let's go cut the taxes of the tech companies that hate us and want to destroy America. Like, that was not exactly wise. Like, let's make sure Google has a lower effective corporate tax rate. And so these same corporations that the Republican Party has gone out of their way to pander to are now basically saying, oh, no, we serve a different master now. We actually don't care about you. We are now going to pander to the woke industrial complex. And there's a lot of different reasons for this. You have the CEO of Coca-Cola, James Quincy, and Ed Bastian, who are very weak people, and all they care about is the next $17 million bonus so they can get another yacht in the Bahamas. They have no actual concern about America, the nation. They have a concern about America, the colony. You see the difference? Like, we are a country that has an economy in it. We're not an economy that happens to be in a country. And so I love free markets because it's the best thing for human beings. I love free markets because it's the best thing for America. When all of a sudden we're supposed to like bow at the altar of free markets, while our country is getting crushed by these corporations, I'm going to call BS on that and say, no, like Coca-Cola and Delta, your tax breaks are ending. And if you want to go play on team left, you're going to lose, because good luck running an airline with the idea that there's no math is racist. Like, try to land a plane with that belief. Good luck. No, seriously. Like, there's no such thing as math. Like, go try and take off when it's 101 degrees outside here in Vegas. Many of you have probably sat many hot days. By the way, they're renaming your airport here to Harry Reid. Is that right? No, no, I heard this today. I said, by the way, we need answers on the treadmill incident. I'm still not convinced of why. That's a total sidebar. I heard that I heard that he sued, and then in discovery on the stand, I don't know if this is true, it came out that it was all a lie and that it was actually his brother. Total sidebar. But you want to talk about a corrupt guy. My goodness. And you guys deserve so much better than that. Anyway, you guys have had many times in the middle of the summer, 104 degree heat, where you want to get out or go on vacation. And all of a sudden they're like, well, it's too hot to take off. We've done the math. We've done the weight limit. We got to burn some fuel. Everyone's been there, especially here in Vegas. I've been there a couple times. Well, if math is racist, Delta Airlines, why don't you just feel your way to land the plane? It's your truth. Go find an airstrip. Will it into existence. Of course, they don't actually believe this nonsense, right? But the rubbish they're teaching your children. And the same with Coca-Cola. So just throw out all the recipes. Just have a go at it. Put whatever you want and try to sell it. Of course, they don't actually believe that math is racist and scientific formulas are racist. Their whole profit model is built on that stuff. Of course not. But the point is that we're now being lectured by weak and, quite honestly, morally compromised rich people that are in control of our mega corporations, trying to now be the muscle of the American left. And I promise I wouldn't do too many mafia references in Vegas, but I just can't resist myself. You guys all know how the mafia used to operate, right? Intimidation tactics. And some of you that have dealt with that form of a cartel know it's a real thing. I'm sure that some of your, you know, grandparents would tell you stories about in the early days of Vegas. That was a real thing that happened here. Not just here, it's all in Chicago. I grew up in Chicago, where if you cross the line, they'll first do a very, very stern warning. You'll like wake up with a horse's head in your bed or something. Or they'll follow you home from work, or you get like a disturbing thing in your mailbox, but you know they're going to make good on the threat. That's the muscle. That's called street justice, not actual justice, right? And that's a bad thing for the country. We try to get away from that, and we try to say that we don't like it when whoever has the biggest baseball bat or the most goons is able to actually dictate what's right for a country. That's how we're now engaging our political discourse. It's no different. Delta and Coca-Cola are the mafioso enforcement thugs of American politics. And it doesn't stop with them. If you look at the list of people that are like, this Georgia law doesn't share our values. They just keep on repeating the same thing over and over again. What they're really saying, though, is that we take orders now from the current president, and we don't want, and this is the other thing, the cowardice. And I will go toe-to-toe with anyone on this. I think the most powerful threat in American politics, and all of you experience this, and it dictates almost all human behavior in this realm, is the fear of being called the R word. That is the number one fear that James Quincy and Ed Bastian have, is the fear of being called a racist. So James Quincy, the CEO of Coca-Cola, and Ed Bastian, they are willing to do whatever they are told to do, as long as they don't have a scathing editorial in the New York Times that says, white silence is violence over at Delta. For them, that's a horror show. They're like, I don't care if the country has to burn. I don't care if everything goes away. And quite honestly, I can't think, I could probably think of some other. That is one of the top levels and examples of cowardice and anti-patriotic behavior. Have a little bit of respect for the American taxpayer that has subsidized Delta for years and bailed you out last year during the lockdown, where we gave you hundreds of billions of dollars to fly empty airplanes around the country. Have a little respect for that. Instead, we have to be lectured by these people. And so this is something that we as conservatives have to realize and recognize, that corporate America is not your friend. It's not. I love free markets. I love free markets because it serves human beings. None of these companies actually believe in free markets. They use our own phrases of free markets against us as a way to not act against these companies. I love entrepreneurship. I love small business. I will not defend a corporate oligarchy. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to all of a sudden say, you know what? We're not able to touch Google, Amazon, Facebook, Delta, and Coca-Cola because these are private companies. I could debunk that in a second. They're mostly private-public partnerships made possible by government interference and U.S. taxpayers. But more importantly, when you start acting like a Democrat super PAC and not like an airline, I'm all of a sudden supposed to just act like that's a normal thing? Absolutely not Delta or Coca-Cola or the entire gauntlet of the list. And so this is a learning moment for conservatives. I think everyone's starting to get it. And it's a little bit shocking because you're like, well, then who is on our side? Because we always thought, well, at least the big companies are on our team, right? 20 years ago, if you would have said that Delta would be anything but on team right, it would be like, if anything, they'd be in the middle at the very worst. But these companies are afraid of the very same campus activists that you deal with at UNLV every day. They're afraid of being smeared, targeted, and these CEOs who are, again, supposed to be the adults of our society are acting like petulant children and saying, just give me my $25 million bonus and I'm going to do whatever I'm told. I'm going to get into the action steps here. And I want to talk about one other thing because did anyone see Tucker Carlson tonight? Anyone? I know that you guys were you weren't here. So I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. It really bothered me because I was watching it on the way here. It's an unrelated but related note. The governor of Arkansas decided to go on Tucker. Here's just a piece of advice. Anyone here, if it ever applies to you, if you're going through a national crisis and Tucker disagrees with you, bad show to go on. Like, not smart, right? Not exactly. So this governor, Asa Hutchinson, vetoed a bill that would have made it illegal to chemically castrate children, right? Probably a pretty agreeable thing, saying that an 8-year-old should not be able to take puberty blockers and castrate God's design. I think that's probably a 90-10 issue, right? I don't exactly think that's a wedge issue. And so, and I went after him briefly on the radio today, but we ran out of time. But and then Tucker had him on a show, and this guy, Asa Hutch, it's a really important point for everyone here, and I want to explore it with you tonight if anyone has questions about it. Asa Hutchinson said, well, we as conservatives believe in limited government. Therefore, I'm cool with 8-year-olds chemically castrating themselves. I don't take the issue of government force lightly. However, if government's good for anything, it's probably good for making sure that 9-year-olds don't chemically castrate themselves. Like, unless we're going to go full Somali libertarian, like, that's probably an initial form of protection against this. And so this governor and Tucker called him out on it. It's all tied together here. He said, have you talked to any corporate interests about this bill? And he denied it. You'll see the exchange in a little bit. It's gone completely viral. And the main point of it is that corporate America is now basically giving the marching orders. The CEOs are the lawmakers of America now. Now, why is that an important development? We never voted for these people. We never did petition drives for them. No one turned out in big numbers to make sure that James Quincy has a disproportionate impact on the American political zeitgeist. So the American constitutional system is being deconstructed without any of your say by this superstructure of corporations that are acting like a government in our own country. That's a big problem. It should, by the way, if there's any socialists here tonight, I'm glad you came. You should be worried about this too. This is what's so ridiculous. And I just get so fired up about this. Like, the socialists are so quiet now that corporations are running the country. You know why? Because they're on their team. For now, just wait. They'll come after you. However, the socialists are like, oh, the corporations like us now because we all can agree that in this woke industrial complex moment, we're not going to do anything about it when they're the ones always ranting and raving about a small group of people controlling a lot of power. And so basically in Arkansas, he vetoed the bill. I'm pleased to say that the legislator overruled his veto. And in Arkansas, it's now going to be illegal to administer chemical castration material to 8 and 9-year-olds. And the governor says, oh, you know, there are studies to show that it's better for mental health of children. And Tucker pressed him. He said, what studies are you talking about? Wasn't able to name one. You know what he said? I trust the doctors. And I just wish the only critique I had, Tucker said, you really trust the doctors after this last year? Especially the ones that are like in the public front facing like Dr. Fauci. I've been wrong about everything over the last year, people. Like, that's who you are now designing public policy around. The people that said, don't wear masks, wear two masks. The people that said, 6 feet apart, virus, nothing to worry about, back to normal by July, the whole thing, right? And transmission rates, death rates, mortality rates, children, schools, they've been wrong about everything. And yet these are the people that we're now crafting public policy around. And so basically what this governor was saying is he was using all of our, he was trying to communicate to the audience and use a weakness of the conservative movement against us. Basically, he was like, oh, everyone's going to love what I have to say as long as I say, and he said this on the show, I'm of the tradition of Ronald Reagan and Bill Buckley, and I like limited government interference. I'm like, boy, are you misreading the conservative movement right now. You're misreading the conservative movement because we have a prioritization of what government should actually do. And it starts with, I don't know, not allowing 8-year-olds to self-destruct God's design against them, which, by the way, will hurt them both chemically, psychologically, spiritually for the rest of their life. Like, if there's a role for government, it should probably say, this is not something we're going to put a stamp of approval behind. And he thinks like, oh, you know, we're going to believe in this kind of libertarian utopia where I'm against it, but I'm going to allow it to happen. And I'm glad the libertarians came tonight. I agree with you guys on speech, guns, and lockdowns. That's about it. We could talk about the rest of it. No, seriously, I think that there should never have been any lockdowns. And I could, it's just the most ridiculous idea that we've ever had. Seriously. And, but this idea that government should not exist, at the very minimum, to protect our children, let alone 20 and 30 year olds from making life altering decisions when puberty starts to kick in, then don't call yourself a conservative, Governor Hutchinson of Arkansas. I just use that example because I just watched this before and I know a lot of you are confronted with that. And then there's another question that we should ask ourselves. Why do we love limited government? We love limited government because we're afraid that maximum government will infringe upon your freedom, your liberty, and your lifestyle. So we have to answer the question, why? We don't just love limited government because it's just a catchphrase. Well, therefore, when other actors, I don't know, like a predatory medical establishment, starts to come in and deceive 8, 9, and 10-year-olds that you need unproven, highly potent chemicals being put in your body that cannot be reversed, then all of a sudden we should say to ourselves, wait a second, that's not going to make our country freer in any sense. Actually, it'll probably do the opposite. It'll probably make you more likely to be in a state of desperation, depression, or whatever it might be. And so we could talk about that. And I think that we have to get our priorities right of exactly why we are conservatives and what we believe in and how we operate. So the Overton window, you guys have heard it before. We've done entire podcasts on it. The Overton window is the spectrum of which all political ideas operate on. And so it's a spectrum. It was started by a guy by, I think, of John Overton was his first name, from the Mackinac Institute, of which ideas operate from unthinkable to eventually policy. And so my thesis that I think you'll all agree with is that the most important thing we as conservatives can do is move issues along the Overton window. And we have been awful at this. The only person that's been good at this, in fact, the best was Donald Trump. And by the way, he was terrific at this. So think about it. Donald Trump forced the issue of immigration, trade, and ending endless wars. Only he could have led on those issues. And you remember how he was under attack the first press conference. When he talked about the southern border, people are coming into our country. What did he say? They're not always sending their best. And people lost it. What did he do? He liberated a conversation on immigration that actually helped the country and helped us solve the problem. And so for those of you that are asking, Charlie, what are our big picture aims of what we're trying to do? We need to move the Overton window. So it's a spectrum from something that's unthinkable. I'll give you a great example of this. Defund the police, right? 5 years ago, if I would have come up here and I would have said, defund the police is a bad idea, you guys would have been like, what are you, like Aldous Huxley on acid or something? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, of course it's a bad idea, right? And it's like, who are you? Now you're like, yeah, it's a bad idea. We have to stop it. How did we go from something that was unthinkable to policy in a short period of time? How do you move that window? And the question is, how should we move the window positively for issues we care about? Well, number one, you need vocal communicators, young people that are willing to unapologetically take stances on issues, not waver against them, do it with charm and charisma, and say, you know what? Our goal is to end abortion in America. And then people will lose their mind, right? Lose it. Like, no, let's have a conversation on that. And so, or our goal very strictly is that immigration should serve your fellow countrymen. And when 20 million people are out of work in our country, maybe we should reform our immigration policies, have a moratorium on immigration in our country, and say college graduates should get jobs before foreign nationals. Like, that should probably be a mission statement of the conservative movement. The point is that we're not thinking broad enough or big enough at all. And if there's one takeaway from the presidency of Donald Trump, there's many, and there's a lot of lessons, and there's things that could have gone differently, and I'm happy to talk about them. But the big lessons, the positive lessons, is the bigger we think, the more likely we are to get big things done. If our big picture vision for America is we're going to cut the estate tax for you, which is what the Senate Republicans did. They gave this long press conference 2 weeks ago on how they want to cut the estate tax. By the way, I support cutting the estate tax. I think it hurts farmers. Fine. Not exactly a compelling issue to go bring out the 75 million people that came and vote. Instead, people want their country back because they feel it just, they feel it slipping from their fingers in a way that they can't control. And by the way, there's nothing hateful, bigoted, or xenophobic to say that you feel like you're losing your country. In fact, it's the opposite. I believe that it's magnanimous, generous, benevolent, and open-minded to say that we've been given a gift and you want to preserve that gift. Unlike the other people that are given a gift and are like, there's nothing special about this, we're going to shatter it to pieces. And so I want you guys to mull over that because I think that's a really important point that we don't talk about enough is how do we move the window of political discourse or any discourse in our country? And that's partially what we're doing here tonight. And I have to say one person who's been better at this than anyone else on the left is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's been really good at this. You want to talk about, because here's why. Let me prove it to you. No one is saying $2 trillion is too much money. Because for the last 2 years, we had to go run in circles saying that $127 trillion is too much money. Right? So what used to be considered an astronomical amount of money, all of a sudden the frame of reference completely changes because of AOC, who gets us thinking in the tens of trillions, but then we say, oh, $2 trillion is not that big of a deal. Whatever, it's a bargain, it's not that big of a deal. And so the challenge for you is what issue matters to you most or matters most to the conservative movement? I would submit to you it would be family development, lowering the divorce rate, increasing the marriage rate, having more children, increasing church attendance, helping small businesses and challenging the corporate oligarchy. Those are things that matter to me and they should matter to you. How are we going to then make changes in that direction in our country and then communicate them? Because the ideas that we're expressing today and our ability to defend them will manifest itself in bills tomorrow, in laws tomorrow. And that's what the left has been really good at. They have been nonstop on these issues, sometimes for decades. And they're finally just reaping the fruit, I guess you could say, of that strategy. So that's something to think about and something of why what you're doing is so important on these college campuses, because just the presence of a singular conservative idea on these university campuses is everything. The fact that it's 99-1 is so important because I guarantee you there's at least another 20 or 30% of people that are afraid. We'll talk about that too if people have questions about it, because I guarantee there will be. People afraid to speak out. People afraid to say something. It's one of the number one problems in the country. And that's why what you're doing and you being here is so critically important and so just imperative for our country. And so this can happen in three ways. And then we'll get to questions. Number one is we must repeat our message and repeat it with charm every single day. Number two, we must build new channels. We have a distribution problem in our country, right? We have a piping issue. We cannot get an idea from point A to point B. I think you'd all agree at that, right? You probably say that if only my neighbors were able to see the correct news flow, if only my sister was able to see the correct news flow, the country would be in a better place. Instead, they're propagandized by the media or by whatever it might be. So the problem is first, obviously, capturing our ideas in ways that can make sense. But then you, and here's your call to action, you must become a social network. You must now do the work that you used to depend on Facebook on. That's right. You have to go text your friends articles, things to think about, podcasts, videos, memes, whatever it might be. There was a way to communicate before Facebook. I know that's an incredibly, MySpace. Yeah, exactly right. or AOL Instant Messenger. And so I know that's a hard thing for people to grasp, but that was a way. You now need to become the new social network. You start book clubs, coffee meetups, community gatherings. If every person here did that, eventually we're going to create, we have to buy ourselves some time is what I'm trying to say. Is that there's finally competitors coming up. There's Rumble, RUMBLE.com, YouTube competitor. Everyone should go download the app and check it out. If you really want to crush Google, they're finally getting started. They're doing a great job. Rumble.com. We have to support the competitors. I'm afraid that we lost an opportunity to crush these companies when we should have. I can get into that. So we have to build new channels. And the third thing is this, which is perseverance, which is I know it's hard right now. I get it. However, we're barnstorming the country. Our Turning Point USA team's doing an unbelievable job. We are in Oklahoma, Missouri, Kentucky, Nashville. We're here in Vegas. Why are we here? We're here for a lot of different reasons. But more than anything else, I'm trying to send a statement to anyone who wishes to watch that disagrees or wants us. It's like, no, we're going to keep gathering. We're going to keep thinking. We're going to keep organizing. We're going to keep our spirit up and our chin up. And we're actually happier than they are despite them winning everything. You notice that? They're the angriest winners in the history of the planet. And as long as they have not, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty of problems, right? There's plenty of things to be upset about. I could talk about it nonstop. Insofar that you don't allow them to take your charm from you, then they're never actually going to win. Because that's the one thing that you have that they don't have. You go watch the late night comedy shows, they are the angriest people. There's no comedy. You notice no one laughs in their live audience. Everyone just claps. And that's why Greg Gutfeld's show is going to do so well, because it's finally someone who's... I have a whole speech on comedy I could do that I'm not going to do. But comedy is the true pursuit of truth, because you laugh when something is true. You laugh when all of a sudden it touches home and it confirms something you know in a way that you never would have thought of before. And the reason why no one laughs anymore is no one's saying things that are true anymore. Instead, they say a bunch of stuff they agree with that aren't true and you clap. So Jimmy Kimmel has become a political commentator instead of a comedian. And that model is easily disrupted. And this town has plenty of comedians. And so something you guys would know about. Okay, I want to get to some questions. I want to just tie that all together, though, is that in order for us to actually make a meaningful difference, you have to stop delegating the responsibility to other people. No more spectator sports stuff. I get these emails and I love our listeners. I learned so much from our listeners. I could do a podcast every week of what I learned from our listeners. We have the smartest listeners on the planet, truly. And I actually mentioned some of the stuff here. But I get some emails of people that say, Charlie, I'm counting on you. I'm like, whoa, wait, what? No. This is not a spectator sport, okay? This is not all of a sudden you're placing a sports bet at Caesar's Palace and hoping Baylor beats Gonzaga, right? Like, that's not how this works. You're in the game, okay? You're an active participant in this. Some people are going to be more involved than others, right? Some people will be more vocal. Some people are not able to be as vocal, but you have to do something in this together. And so you got to cut out the spectator sport idea and then also understand that your salvation is not just going to come on Air Force One one day. And I have to say this, and I mean this as loving. You guys got to cut out this hopium stuff, okay? The stuff that you're reading on these message boards, none of it came true. I got more emails about this stuff, like Mike Pence is in Gitmo. Like, no, he's not. Trump's not becoming president in August. Trump's not becoming president next week. Some of you guys might know these things. You just got to stop it and just focus on what is real and true. Like, Charlie, what's real and true? We spend 6 hours a day researching and going through this stuff. When we get something wrong, we'll correct it. But I actually believe we were less active as a conservative movement because people believe, like, you don't understand, there's a plan and there's massive arrests happening. Like, no, there isn't. These are written by leftists trying to convince you to stay at home and do nothing when none of this stuff was ever going to happen. None of it. And it's tough love that I have to give a lot of people, but it's written by psychopaths sometimes that quite honestly want to manipulate you into inaction so that they can then dominate the country. So, and if some of you are like, what are you talking about? Some of you are nodding your head. Some of you completely disagree and you think that Trump's going to be president next week. And okay. I hope you're right. Let's put it that way. Okay. Let's do some questions. And thank you guys. This was a lot of fun. That was just my opening remarks. So thank you.
It may be a cliche when you say you are what you eat, but it is the absolute truth. Eating the right foods ensures you get the nutrients into your body that are essential to maintain your health and vitality. It's also true that if you're not getting enough fruits and vegetables every day, you could be seriously deficient in those nutrients that are so vital to your health. Can you imagine how you'd feel if you were eating 10 servings of fruits and vegetables every day? I could tell you from personal experience, it's a game changer because I take 6 daily capsules from Balance to Nature every single day. Just knowing I'm getting vital nutrients sourced from 31 fruits and vegetables every day makes a huge difference in my life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code CHARLIE. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. Use the discount code CHARLIE.
Hey, good afternoon, Charlie. My name is Marcos. I'm a first-generation American and proud veteran of this country.
Well, thank you for your service. We're glad to
thank you. So, you know, we talk about taking action. We talk about how these corporate leaders are afraid of the R word. But honestly, being, you know, a person of color, you know, the only racist remarks I hear every day in the media are coming from the white liberal who thinks I'm can't do math, I can't get a freaking driver's license, I can't read, and somehow I made it to college by being a victim, all right? So if we want to take action, how do we wake up these minorities, and how do we get our conservative people who are colorblind, and I trust them more than any white liberal any day, to not be racist, how do we team up and fight back against these white liberals with these ideas that we're all illiterate, can't get a driver's license, and we're somehow victims just because I was born a little bit darker?
So I want you guys to listen to that closely. It's already happening. And you being here and talking with this much force, they're very worried. And they should be, because I'm telling you, if we do our job in 10 years, the Latino community will be a majority conservative community in our country. It won't even be close. And I have the same sort of hope and optimism in Black America. Candace Owens, phenomenal, doing a great job with this. And she was our communications director for a couple of years. So here's the one piece of advice I have for you. You need to get louder and noisier, because whether we like it or not, identity politics is what drives a lot of this conversation in our country. And you, being a first-generation immigrant, do you speak Spanish or speak Spanish, and you served our country, because they value arguments from identity over truth, I'm not a big fan of that, then we need to get you a bigger platform and you need to speak out even more. It's hard though, because you're going to be called he will be called nastier stuff than anyone in this room will if you're a white conservative, just to be very blunt, because they'll say you're a race traitor. You've probably been called that. You all these different things. And so what do we do to help break it up? We need to be very serious about not allowing the media to convince us that the way things are is the way things will be, that we can make serious movements in one direction. And I'll be very honest with you. The white upper middle class liberals, I think, are the most sanctimonious, self-righteous people in the country, that if there was a group of people that are actually the most racist, as you say, they are the most racist people in the country. It's not even close. And they're on this kind of... Never underestimate the power of white guilt, ever. It's one of the most powerful things in the country that dictates so much public policy. But I have hope and optimism, because we are getting more questions like this. Charlie, what can I do? What can I do? Man, let's make more noise. Let's get our message out. Let's communicate again. We have to fix the distribution problem, because a lot of the portals of communication in the Hispanic community tend to be very, very far to the left. And Telemundo, Univision, just to name a couple. So we got to fix that problem. But people like you are the solution. And so we have a Latino summit coming up in Phoenix next week. So I hope you're there. And we're trying to do our part to that. But I want to thank you for being here tonight. Thank you again for your service. It's terrific. And if anyone disagrees, feel free to cut in line. So, yeah, just whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Charlie.
At any time. It's fine. You can... get your stuff prepped and then come up. So,
sweet. Hey, Charlie, I just want to say I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
Just want to say congrats on your engagement.
That's Thank really you. Exciting. Erica's right here.
Hey. Awesome. So I don't know if you heard recently, but Joe Biden said, and I quote, "In a few years, I have no idea if there will be a Republican Party." Do you think that's a gaffe or a threat?
Boy, that's a really good question. I heard him say that too. And it kind of almost sent a chill down my spine, to be perfectly honest with you. So I said, was he told to say this? Is there some sort of plan that we don't know about? Was this just kind of a typical Joe Biden moment where he's like falling upstairs, the first person ever to fall up the stairs in the history of the country? It's never happened. I've never seen it, actually. It was an act of anti-gravitational, just three times. Someone's got to get that guy life alert really soon. You know, that's... And by the way, I wouldn't make fun of him if he wasn't destroying the country. Let me just be very clear, okay? I don't just make fun of people lightly, but when you're taking a meat cleaver to Western civilization, the bets are off when you fall up the stairs and then all of a sudden no one talks about it. Okay, so do I think it's a threat? I mean, look, do I think that there's a plan that they're trying to unfold to silence all of us, intimidate you, and suffocate us, pass H.R. 1, and create a one-party state in this country? Absolutely. And I just want to be very clear. I've said this a lot, and I need to say it every event. And people on the live stream are going to say, oh, we've heard him say this 1,000 times. Well, repetition is the soul of memory. How many times have you heard this phrase? We all want the same thing. We just have different ways to get there. From conservatives say that too, right? I was taught this in high school. I think to myself, what an effective lie to have us all of a sudden yield the terrain of good intentions to people that bitterly want to burn America. Let me be very clear. They want 1 million abortions a year, which we currently have. I want zero. They want women's sports abolished. I want women's sports to be preserved. They want open borders. I want a border wall. They want confiscation of weapons. I want you guys to be able to buy a weapon and protect yourself. We want different Americas. We don't want the same thing. They want a completely different thing. And so they don't mean well. And this is I don't mean individual liberals. There are good individual liberals. There are good individual leftists. There's a difference between liberals and leftists. Happy to build that out for you guys if there's interest in that. But the main difference is liberals value free speech, leftists don't. Liberals are like Alan Dershowitz, or in that tradition, leftists are like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's the best kind of juxtaposition I could give there. So I don't know, but you guys better take that threat very seriously. That there is even, I guess what you understand the significance, could you imagine if Donald Trump gave a press conference and said, oh yeah, if the Democrat Party, if it even exists. There would have been, I kid you not, a front page New York Times article that said, Donald Trump's trying to mobilize the military against Democrats. I guarantee you. Like that would have been the front page of the New York Times. And we just got to say, it's like, oh yeah, it's like a non, no, that's a really, that's half the country. And again, maybe he's just doing what Joe Biden does and he just kind of slips and does whatever. I'm not so sure. I think that they're trying. I am a believer, and I'll go with anyone. I think that they're trying to go for the jugular. I think this is their moment. They've waited long enough. They want a one-party state like California where we're just the annoying minority. And, you know, they throw us a crumb every once in a while. And we have no choice. We have no chance to ever get back into serious power. This is their big attempted final blow. If we could steer it off, the Republic can survive. But I think that's what they want to do politically. That's their big driving force. Thank you for being here. Thanks.
Good evening, Charlie. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Angel, and I am actually a first-gen immigrant from China. I moved here when I was 12. And I think my question for you is, how can people who are like me, who's fled actual socialism and communism, to start speaking up about our experiences? And are there any tips and pointers for how do we start utilizing the platform and start letting our voices be heard?
So why don't you expand on that for the audience? How is what you're seeing here similar to what you saw in communist China?
So a lot of times in China, actually growing up is really tough for me because there's a lot of conformities going on. And they want to shape all of the kids into a really good student who is able to ace every single test. And obviously, I was not one of those, unfortunately. And I have too much individuality. So I was, hide away from everybody. I was judged a lot. I was called many of names. And so far, I'm seeing the same thing for conservatives, too. People who are different, people who celebrate individualities are actually getting discriminated against everything else they're, you know, what they're believing in. And that is one similarity that I am seeing, and I am freaking out about it. And I have no way how to educate other people about this because I fled there. I've experienced it firsthand. My family has suffered, and I want people to start realizing and waking up about all these lies they're being fed into.
First of all, we're glad you're here and not there. I'll tell you that much. I will repeat what I said. Was it Marcos? Did I get that right? The name right? Your wonderful comments. We need to have more people listen to you. My biggest frustration in America is the statement, it can't happen here. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who's a man that every single person should know, let alone every conservative should know, wrote a book called The Gulag Archipelago. And he famously had a quote. He said, the biggest lie fed by communists to Westerners is this idea that it can't happen here. Show me a place where it couldn't happen in the 20th century. Everyone said that. That can't happen in Cuba. Can't happen in mainland China. Can't happen in Russia. And it happened in every single place. There was a Soviet dissident. I was just reading this the other night. And she had a phenomenal quote that is more timely than ever. She said, you know you're entering soft totalitarianism when you don't know if what you do today could mean the end of your lifestyle or your life or career tomorrow. Think about that. Where that you're judged on something you did a decade ago, like reading a Dr. Seuss book or having gone with the wind in your curriculum. That's pure totalitarianism. And quite honestly, I meet so many people like you, and they all have the same intensity. I just wish Americans would listen. I have a little bit of a flare of optimism because I think Americans are late to the game. We eventually wake up, call myself foolishly optimistic, and that optimistic, that's fine. But I'll say this, is that when I talk to immigrants that have seen communism and socialism, they'll say one thing, which is that Americans won't realize it until they lived it. That's something you probably feel to yourself. Like, you guys are all idiots. You don't get it. You're going to have to all of a sudden see it for yourself. I hope that's not the case. And the second thing, I think it's such an unbelievable disservice for those of us that live in America to not listen to the warnings of the people that almost died under these ideologies. And so the question is, what do we actually do about it and how do we get the message out? And again, you being here and spreading truth is so important. It's the most important thing. And they don't want your story to be able to get out. They want to kind of hypnotize Americans into inaction. But I'm going to repeat, I'm going to tell you one story. Americans are almost always late to the game. It's our charming attribute. When World War II was raging, Winston Churchill did everything he could. The greatest man of the 20th century, by the way, Winston Churchill. And every young person should know their Winston Churchill. And the fact they're removing them from schools is such an unbelievable disservice. It's just beyond. He wrote 50 books, saved Western civilization, twice British prime minister, more knowledge of the classics and philosophy than any other person. The guy was unbelievably brilliant. We're supposed to believe that. We're just supposed to toss him out. But Winston Churchill famously said, I said this last night at Calvary Chapel, when Pearl Harbor happened, he was sitting with his war cabinet and comes in and his messenger says, sir, Imperial Japan just bombed the port in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And he turns up to his war cabinet and he says, well, we just won the war. So what are you talking about? Said, start planning what we're going to ask for when we win. Said, the Americans are mad. We're going to win. He walked out of the room. Once we wake up, watch out. And it might take a lot. I don't know what it's going to be. As the great Ernest Hemingway said, things happen gradually, then suddenly. He was so great. Again, do they even teach Hemingway anymore? No, of course not. He was a white male. Why would you teach, you know, nothing nice to say. No Shakespeare, no Hemingway, no Mark Twain, but I'm sure you get Angela Davis and Robin DiAngelo and all that garbage. Ernest Hemingway had such an amazing ability to say so much and so little. Brevity is the soul of wit. And gradually, then suddenly. And I think that there is going to be a moment, and then I'm praying for this, when all of a sudden we're going to have this where we say, that's it. We are now
awake. I think we've gotten close to it in certain moments, but they will push too far. And as long as there's gatherings like this of standing room only, of people that are listening and they're sharing information, it can happen very quickly. And hold out that hope, everybody, because what they want you to do is they want you not to attend events like this tonight. They want you to instead watch, what is that ridiculous show, Bridgerton or whatever on Netflix, whatever. I don't even follow that stuff. You should have a Netflix subscription. They want you to do that instead of coming here and waiting for that moment. Because when it cracks, we don't even know what it looks like. But tyranny is a very tricky thing. But as soon as there's a response and a rebellion to tyranny, of course, peacefully, because that's who we are, then all of a sudden they're going to lose. Do you have a follow-up comment that you want to make?
Unfortunately, I do. I'm actually from California, too.
Oh, my chapter. So you went from one communist place to the other.
I know. It's so unfortunate. And I actually want to point out that my chapter leader, Raul, actually is an immigrant as well. And people like us have stories that want to share. But in California, we're always being shut down about the things that we want to bring to the table. And I think it's just really tough for all of us to, especially people like us who've seen it firsthand, who's experienced it and family suffered from it. And I just want to ask you one really quick follow-up. Like, what is there for us to do in California specifically? Because it is so tough on liberal campuses right now, especially for me. I've actually been discriminated a lot and people question me if I'm actually an immigrant. And what is there for us to do to actually be able to take it off in California, a place where socialism is literally growing every single corner?
Yeah, look, boy, California's got its own problems. I'm actually more optimistic about California. And again, I'm going to say this not on behalf of Turning Point, because this is a political thing. The fact that there is a political referendum against Gavin Newsom gives me hope. And so this is a really good thing. And this is where we should take a page out of this. I know so many of the California people that were behind it, including my pastor, Rob McCoy, and many others. It's time for us to play offense, everybody. It's time for us. We might lose the recall. Who cares? Gavin Newsom is waking up, shaving, showering, and eating, thinking about the fact that he might lose power. We've already won if that's the case, okay? The fact that we're living in his head is an awesome thing. And that's where you should field candidates for every position. I'm talking personally here. And so California, you want to talk about a long-term project? That's California. But guess what? California was a long-term project for them. California used to be the state of the future. California was one of the reddest states in the country that had Nixon and Reagan from it. Yorba Linda and Reagan as governor. Not that way anymore. Changed for a lot of reasons, immigration being one of them. But they were relentless. They took over the civil service. They took over the teacher unions, took over all of it. So you have to be relentless against it. And you have to win the small ones to win the big one. So you're going to win a school board race. You're going to win a mayor's race, right? You're going to get more people activated. But again, the worst thing you can do is play into the attitude of despair. The worst thing. No shot. Forget it. I'm going to at least get a nice beach house when, you know, they burn everything to the ground. I hope they eat me last. I have no patience for that attitude, by the way. Move to France. That's what they do really well. No, the French are known, I don't mean to insult the French, but I kind of make fun of them because they make fun of us. They're known for two things, the white flag and the tourniquet. That's it. So if you want to go surrender, go to France. We fight here in America and we win, and we're going to win this battle.
So nice to see you again, Charlie. So the question I have is simple. The media organizations out there, I'm not going to name any for respect, that often when they put clips on YouTube and social media, they often have this person destroys, annihilates, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that helps, Turning Point and other organizations reach out to those who oppose with opposing views? Because they might feel alienated because, you know, they feel like they're going to be put on viral and you know, sort of, you know, with these, I don't know how to say it, but do you think this sort of aggressive rhetoric of, you know, this person just destroys this young college student who just had a simple question and maybe misguided, do you think that helps, you know, I guess all of us come together?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if our goal is to come together. Let me be clear. Our goal is to win, right? So I don't know, but you're right. And you have a really good question. No, look, I think, and look, we do those posts all the time. And for a couple of reasons. First of all, I want the most amount of visibility and eyeballs possible. And we're in a huge competition for attention online. And so
And we're not misrepresenting. I don't think we're misrepresenting the clip. You guys can, you know, judge for yourself. Probably a reason why we don't have many people voluntarily to go disagree tonight. Go figure that one out. It's like a winnowing and winnowing pool. But I think that's probably a fair point that you make, which is that, you know, what is the intent and the purpose? And I think I'd have to look at it from a piece by piece type thing. But generally, I'll stand by our strategy, which is if you publicly want to come up and say something really dumb in front of millions of people, then I'm not going to be shy in publicizing that exchange. In fact, I'll make the argument it's actually really helpful for people to see how to properly respond to these things and how to be able to debate against it. And so, but yeah, I think it's a well-intentioned comment. Do I think generally it helps? I think it's a strategy that absolutely works because we are in a position right now that we want to see our ideas win. And let me tell you why those videos do well. Because whether you realize it or not, when you log onto the internet and you search anything political, you're like, all I see is my ideas losing. I see my ideas losing on the Washington Post. I see my ideas losing in MSNBC. Can anyone win? Please. And that's why those videos do well, because that's actually an opportunity there. Is the language destroys and all that. Again, that's more internet lingo, right? And again, I'm happy to discourse to anyone about that. But I think that's a very good question. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie, big time. But one question is, what do you think is the best path forward to 2024? Is it Trump? Is it Trump Jr.? Candace Owens?
So I will, I'll talk personally, not on behalf of Turning Point here. Yeah, no, no. So I think it's way, way, way too preemptive to even be talking about it. People say, who do I like? I think Ron DeSantis is acing every single test that's thrown at him, right? But it's early, right? I've known him for a while, and he's been terrific. And the way CBS went after him the other day was just so despicable, and he handled it brilliantly. But I think we gotta get a couple other things right before we even talk about that. Number one, we have to fix the way we do elections in our country. We have to fix the way that we have mail-in absentee balloting. We have to fix the way we do elections in our country. And then we have to have a really, really good 2022. Right? A really good 2022. And we have to take back the House and hopefully the Senate. We have to take back chambers of power and hopefully disrupt their kind of uniparty that they have running in Washington, D.C. And beyond that, I hope we have a really spirited debate. If Trump ends up running, that'll be the right decision. And if he doesn't end up running, that'll be the right decision. It's all on what he believes he can offer. He comes with a ton of positives. And the positives are obviously his ability to draw crowds. He's a former president. He has a record to run on. He's a brilliant communicator. And we all know the negatives. There's a portion of the country that no matter what he does, they will not entertain voting for him. So we have to weigh that, you know, that cost and that benefit. Way too early to tell. But I could tell you this, that if we don't fix the way we do elections, if we don't broaden our movement and get better at articulating our ideas, it's kind of irrelevant, right? Which is partially one of my main focuses and mission on that. And also, we have to fix the tech landscape. We have to have a YouTube competitor. Hopefully it's Rumble. We have to have a Twitter competitor. Maybe Parler will be back online. We have to have a search engine competitor. By 2024, if we're still operating in this triangle of tyranny, the triangle of tyranny is Facebook, Google, and Twitter, forget it. We're done. We have to create our own infrastructure of distribution, or else we're just going to have the same thing happen again, where you have the next president's son who mysteriously drops off a laptop at a computer repair shop with X-rated material that's now on the Chinese internet, of stuff that if anyone in this room did, you'd be in a place without bail. Let's just put it that way, right? And allegedly, I have to say, whatever. And so, but then you're not even allowed to talk about it on Twitter, Facebook, or these other places. And if you do, you lose access to your accounts. That can never happen again. That is direct election interference. And so we have to think more, less about who and more about what does the landscape and the infrastructure look like. Does that make sense? We have to fix the way that we actually mechanically go about administering our elections and doing these sort of processes. And then the rest, I think, will figure itself out. And the other thing is this. People say, who do we support all this? Just be active in the primary. And this is actually a really important state for it, obviously. Just when they come through here, which, by the way, their little whistle stop tour is going to start a year from January here, maybe even earlier. So you just look at them in the eyes and you ask them very clear questions about things that matter to you. And if you smell nonsense, call them out on it. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, how are we doing, Charlie? We just flew out from Grand Canyon University here. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great school.
So my question was just about social media. You actually just started talking about it, which is crazy because I was going to ask about that. But pretty much my opinion or my question is, what is your opinion on, for example, like Justice Thomas talking about Twitter being a public forum compared to it being a private company? I know you're talking about the private company earlier or the private companies and how much of a private company are they if they're being held by the government and all that stuff. So do you think it's better that we go for things like section or 230 and things like that? Or is it better to pretty much go and like try to make our own social media platforms privately, even though the other ones are so big? Is that even going to work?
I think it has to be an all of the above strategy. And so we have to get them in the courts. We have to hopefully get some rulings that will break them up that say it's not good for a country that all search results, which is the ability to go find information, is 92% of them is controlled by one company. That's not a good thing or a healthy thing for the country. And so Justice Thomas just wrote an unbelievable piece. It was kind of I think it was an opinion on a case. I couldn't quite figure out. He just kind of meandered into this issue and just wrote about it for like 6 pages. And he said, and it was so brilliant. He said, these companies, you know what they do? All they do is connect point A to point B. These are carriers. They don't pore over creating content. They don't have massive production costs. They simply connect people from point A to point B. Therefore, they should be regulated like communication carriers. And I sympathize with that argument. I do. And so here's the argument that I make. From a natural rights doctrine perspective, anytime our First Amendment rights are violated, that should bother us, especially by companies that are more powerful than our own government. And these companies are more powerful than our own government. And so I'll use the Chicago example, and I've used it before. And it's so funny. Clarence Thomas used a very similar example, unrelated, in his dissent. Here, so you, from Chicago, if anyone was in South Bend, Indiana, where Pete Buttigieg was a failed mayor. By the way, if you want to see Pothole City, go to South Bend, Indiana. I've never seen so many potholes in my life. This guy's running the Department of Transportation. It's like you can't make this up. It's unbelievable. And so if you drove from South Bend, Indiana, to downtown Chicago, you have to travel on what's called the Chicago Skyway. Anyone drive on it before? It's a piece of garbage, yes. But it's a privately owned highway, okay? And it's a public-private partnership. That's an interstate highway, and it's illegal if they put up a sign that said Christians and Trump supporters are not allowed to drive on the Chicago Skyway. It's against the law. These are information highways. So the same way that you have a right to travel. So here's the argument that people used to make about the interstate highway. I should be able to have whoever I want. I do not. This is what they used to say about black people in the South, by the way. I don't want black people to be able to ride on my highway. And you know what the Supreme Court said? They said, sure, they have a choice. They could swim in a river. They could ride a bike, but they don't have a comparable choice. So the Supreme Court authored an opinion that if there is not a comparable choice, like another Google or another Twitter or another Facebook, then you're violating the First Amendment rights and the free speech rights or the constitutional rights of your citizen. The Supreme Court's already ruled on this before. And so, yeah, as far as what we do, we have to start competitors. We have to sue them. We have to keep pressure on them. We have to hopefully change public opinion against them. But these companies have way too much power. Those of you that follow our podcast, you know I've been obsessed about this issue for quite some time. And it's just a matter of time before we're all kicked off social media and we're governed by a couple tech companies that quite honestly hate our country in some sort of corporate fascist, you know, environment. And so the solution, I'm already starting to see it change. Here's what we have to say. By 2024, we are no longer using Google. We're no longer using Facebook and we're no longer using Twitter. That has to be the big picture mission statement for every conservative across the country. How we get there, I don't care. Thank you.
By now, you've all heard me talk about MyPillow and Mike Lindell. And I know a lot of you want to support Mike Lindell and saying, Charlie, how do I support Mike Lindell? Here's how you can support Mike Lindell and our program, Combo Package. It's my slippers. That's right, you heard me. My slippers. They are the most comfortable slippers I've ever worn. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop these, designed to wear indoor and outdoor all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering 40% off his new My Slippers. My Slippers are so comfortable that you will want to get some for the whole family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square. Use promo code Kirk. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and MyPillow Towel Sets. Or call 800-875-0425 and use promo code Kirk. Just go to MyPillow.com, buy a bunch of stuff, and use promo code Kirk. That's basically the long and short of it. If you want to support Mike Lindell and Charlie Kirk, be comfortable, sleep well, MyPillow.com, purchase a bunch of stuff, promo code Kirk. God bless America.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Charlie, for being here and taking questions. So I'm an undergraduate student from Arizona, and I'm studying business.
GCU.
GCU, yeah. Yeah, so a very big entrepreneur, love free markets, love that whole ideology. But it's very concerning when I see some of my peers who are very big advocates for universal pay. And it's been concerning 4 or 5 years ago when Bernie Sanders was saying theoretical ideas about, oh, we should have universal pay in America. And now you have Andrew Yang, who was first placed running for the mayor of New York City, advocating for universal pay. So if you were in my shoes, what would be your advice to try to reason with my peers for free markets?
Yeah, look, the argument against free money is a tough one. And so you have to look. Just so everyone's clear, do you know how easy my job would be if I just came up and I just said, everyone gets free money, you get free weed, free housing, you're debt forgiven, and I just walked off stage, like a 5-minute speech, right? Instead, I have to make arguments about why earned success is important. And so here's basically the argument, and it's more of a moral argument than anything else. By the way, we already have universal basic income in one form or fashion in our country. We're already losing that argument because the last couple $1 trillion stimulus bills were that way. Here's the more important argument, which is, do you believe in earned success or do you believe in redistributed money? Basically, that's the question. And you're going to lose that argument most time because here's what the lockdown taught me. People don't actually necessarily want to be free. They want to be taken care of. And so you have to teach them that wanting to be free is actually a better way to live, a more meaningful It's a way to live a more meaningful life. And that's a harder argument. So I'm not saying that you're going to be able to win more people over. This is one of the reasons, by the way, the church is so important in our country. Here's why. It was either Madison or Adams that said that, as Madison, that if all men were angels, I'm going to screw this quote up. You guys know the quote. If all men were angels, government would not be necessary. If angels ran our government, then, I'm going to screw it up, but you guys know the quote. The point is that if you come from a belief, and the even better quote about this, I think, was from Adams, which is that you can only have a republic if you have a moral people in a republic. And the church, if you do not have a vibrant church or some religious institution in the country communicating what is right, what is wrong, the moral correct course of action in a country, especially when it comes to what's the moral case to take against taking free money from the government? Well, absent some moral order or authority, you just take the money and it's whatever serves your purposes in that moment. And we're going to lose that argument time and time again, absent a strong moral backbone in our country where, no, actually, if a man does not work, he does not eat. It's a biblical principle and it's a truthful principle. It's a harder teaching. It's tougher to communicate. So thank you.
How you doing, Charlie? Thank you for coming out today. I think I'm going to be the first disagreement. So
thanks for being here.
Thank you. My question is, so during the presidential campaigns, Trump and Republicans criticized Biden by saying that he was going to be soft on China. So far, I just wanted to list out some things that he's done against China and then get your opinion on that. So he condemned the Uyghur genocide right off the bat, Secretary Blinken did. And he's waging a tech war with China right now by reevaluating our supply lines of microchip production so we're not relying on China. As of 5 hours ago, they've raised the idea of boycotting the Olympics in China. And he's raised the idea of a conference of democracies to curb Chinese expansion, whether that be military or influential, like what they're doing in neocolonialism in Africa. And this isn't something that's different for Biden. He has a history of supporting genocide victims. So if you take a look at what he's done with the Bosniaks in Bosnia when he supported them in the war or the Albanians in Kosovo, I mean, he has a really strong history of standing with oppressed people. So do you think these criticisms now that you know all these things that he's doing, do you think they're sort of falling flat, at least with the China thing?
Is that the whole list?
No, there's more. I just wanted to pick like as many as I could in 20 minutes.
Okay, yeah. Has he called China our enemy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's implied.
No, he hasn't. He said it's his rival.
I think it's implied that if he wants to stop Chinese expansion, they're an adversary of the United States.
No, he said they're a rival. Has he called China our enemy?
I think that's just a semantic argument.
No, it's not. He said, I refuse to call them an enemy because they're an economic rival. Let me ask you another question. Has he signed an executive order trying to close Confucius Institutes in America?
The Confucius Institutes is an ongoing debate right now, so we'll have
to... No, it's a very simple debate. They're military institutions on college campuses, and Joe Biden supports them in America. Let me ask you another question. Does he support tariffs on imported Chinese goods, yes or no?
He supports a tech war. Tariffs?
No, tariffs. Answer the question.
Probably not, no.
Okay, right, so that's soft on China. When Blinken went up to Alaska to meet with China, did he even respond when China made a fool of our country and said we're a bunch of racist bigots, according to our own language? Did he respond to that?
Yes, they did.
How?
Well, they replied to it.
By admitting it and basically saying to China, you know what, you're right, we have a lot of problems to correct.
But we always correct them. For example, the civil rights. I mean, look how far we came from the Civil War.
Are you comparing what's happening right now to Jim Crow, the 1960s?
No, I'm saying we have a dark history, but we've come far from it.
I agree with that. So let me just ask another couple questions, because has Joe Biden supported military movements in the South China Sea or stood with the people of Taiwan as the Chinese Communist Party has threatened Taiwan to obliterate them off the face of the earth? No, they haven't. Taiwan has been singled out for destruction. Mm-hmm. And Joe Biden has done nothing to stand with the people of Taiwan. Let me ask you another question. Has Joe Biden explained the now revealed emails that show that he's probably a 10% holder in a Chinese Communist Party company, thanks to Tony Bobulinski? Has Joe Biden explained that?
If they want to go to court for that, they can.
I'm asking a very – has Joe Biden explained that he's probably a minority partner in a Chinese Communist Party
company? He doesn't have to explain it until he's formally accused of it in a court of law. I think unsubstantiated claims shouldn't be entertained.
It's substantiated. It's a laptop that was owned by his son.
Well, why don't they take it to court?
They are – And so let me ask you another question, though. So your basic premise is Joe Biden's totally tough on China, everything. Yeah, that's basically your contention.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the premise was that he's going to be extremely soft. But
no, he's
as
beyond
we can
soft.
See,
he's owned by China. He's not just soft on China. He's a subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party. He's an employee of the Chinese Communist Party. So everything Xi Jinping wants, we are doing. He is pandering to racial division in our country. He's emasculating our military. He's caring more about wokeism than military excellence. He does nothing in the South China Sea. He's not putting any additional tariffs. In fact, he's trying to repeal them that Donald Trump put on steel and solar panels for imports into America. Joe Biden is doing the bidding of Xi Jinping at every single turn. So let me ask you just another couple questions. Has Joe Biden in any way, shape, or form condemned the Belt and Road Initiative, or has Joe Biden admitted that the virus came from China?
The Belt and Road Initiative would be covered under that curbing Chinese expansion, which I mentioned earlier. I think you're trying to play a very semantic game right now with did he condemn this specifically when he broadly condemned the
general expansion? What you call semantics, I call truth. Because language is the way that we communicate values with one another. So let me ask you this question. Has Joe Biden admitted that the Chinese coronavirus came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology?
If evidence shows that, he will admit
it. No, has Joe Biden even mentioned the fact that this virus came? You're wearing a mask up to your eyeballs.
Yeah.
Is that because of China or not?
Well, I think it did come from China, but where it came from originally in China, whether it was natural or man-made.
Let me ask you a question. What has Joe Biden done to hold China accountable for the greatest epidemiological Pearl Harbor in American history?
We'll have to see. It's only like 2 months
into the
presidency.
Let me get this straight. China invokes an epidemiological Pearl Harbor, and we'll have to see.
I have a question for you, though, over that. Trump, in return, in the Taiwan, two questions. Taiwan.
We're talking about the virus. I would like your
answer. Yeah, I know.
The virus is really important.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Obviously, you take it seriously. Yeah. And so is China to blame?
I think China is to blame, yeah.
Why can't Joe Biden say that?
Because it's a very diplomatic issue. He has to wait until the evidence is there.
It's a diplomatic issue. Could you imagine after Pearl Harbor, Franklin Delano Roosevelt? You know, it's a diplomatic issue that Pearl Harbor was bombed.
I think it was clear that the Japanese intentionally attacked Pearl Harbor, but whether the Chinese intentionally, which I believe they did, by the way, believe they did.
Okay.
But until there's evidence to support that can be globally spread, I think it's irresponsible of Biden to make a statement on it. I think he's waiting for the facts to get out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's stunning. So you wanted to make a point about Taiwan.
Yeah, so you said, has he condemned the Chinese aggression against Taiwan? And yes, in the town hall, he mentioned that he condemns the Chinese trying to violate the one China or the two China policy with China and Taiwan. He condemned it in the town hall. And then I also wanted to ask you one follow-up question with Trump. Yeah. Trump, in an Axios report, allegedly, gave the Chinese a green light for their actions in Hong Kong and the Uyghur genocide in exchange for better leverage in his trade deal, which ultimately flopped, I believe. Okay. What do you think about that?
It's not true.
Well, I mean...
Well, first of all, I said allegedly and reportedly.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump was more tough on China than any other president in American history. And he was unafraid to call it the China virus. Joe Biden has always been very close to China. He said that, quote, China's rise is a good thing for America. Can you explain, I'm curious, take as much time as you need, if you have any problem with the president's son flying on Air Force Two with Chinese bank officials and returning on Air Force Two with $2 billion in an investment fund? Does that bother you?
So when I just mentioned allegedly and reportedly, you denied it as being fake.
It's not true. Like I
it's
don't
not true. I agree.
But
as
guess
long
what?
As it's, as
Joe
long
Biden's
alleged.
President, so let's focus on who's
yeah,
in charge
exactly,
right now.
Exactly.
Right? So is Hunter Biden, yeah. like, can you explain that for me? Because I'm really interested.
Yeah. So all of those things are also allegations, right? And it's kind of hypocritical.
No. I just said facts. I didn't say that there was pay to play. I said...
They're
we know
facts.
Because of flight logs, Air Force Two, Chinese bank officials go on with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
They're not facts. Though.
They fly to China, and 2 days later, he returns with $2 billion. Does that bother you?
But that's not a fact. If that is allegedly what happened.
You're
if,
entitled to your own
faith,
opinion, not your own facts. So tell me where I was wrong with that.
Out of good faith, if that is allegedly true, I have a problem with that. Yes.
Well, then you should do a lot more research, man, because that's just the tip of the iceberg of the Biden crime family.
They should bring it before court.
I'm sorry?
They should bring it before a court of law and test it in court.
No.
I don't know why they're so afraid of courts. I mean, they lost.
Well,
they lost all of their election
losses. First of all, they're not afraid of courts. Second of all, we have a weaponized and politicized Department of Justice in our country. Oh, by the way, Hunter Biden is under active federal criminal investigation right now. We'll see how that one works out. So I have another question. You call it semantics. I call it very important that he doesn't call it a rival or an enemy. You say the Confucius Institutes is something that is yet to be debated, even though Joe Biden has done nothing against it. The bigger question, I guess, I have when it comes to the Chinese issue, do you think Joe Biden is better equipped to handle China than Donald Trump was?
Yeah.
I would love to ask another question. Did you vote for Joe Biden?
Yeah, but I was a Republican for 4 years.
Okay.
I switched to Democrats about 3 months ago.
No, don't boo. I know. Okay, that's fine. Why did you vote for Joe Biden?
Specifically for his foreign policy. Foreign policy and because I believe that Donald Trump was doing a lot of damage to the country,
okay.
Foreign policy-wise.
So foreign policy, I'm just curious because I don't get to actually a chance to talk to Biden voters very often. So it's kind of like meeting some, like, wow. Did you think Donald Trump did a good thing with the Abraham Accords, the historic peace deal with Israel, UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan? Was that a good thing for the country?
For the governments of the Gulf states and for the government of Israel, it might have been a good thing, but I don't think it solves any issues with people in the region.
Okay. Was it a good thing that Donald Trump was the first president of both of you and I lifetime to end endless wars and not declare a new war?
I think the idea of an endless war is something that's pushed by more isolationist groups. I don't agree with ending endless wars. I think the United States has a duty to the world to act as the quote-unquote global policeman and to, you know, stop things like active genocides going on.
So you're okay with Afghanistan just perpetually happening? Guys, show some respect. Guys, come on. Don't act like college campus leftists, please, okay? Seriously. Let him an opportunity to speak. I'm letting him finish his thoughts. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. So you think that you voted for Joe Biden for foreign policy.
Yeah.
So not starting new wars was not like a game changer.
I come from a country. I came here as a refugee.
From the Balkan Peninsula, I'm guessing.
Yes, from
the
Bosnia.
Way you described,
because there was a war there. And, you know, it was McCain, Lieberman, Biden, and Dole that were the advocates of sending U.S. troops to Bosnia. And if it wasn't for the U.S. sending airstrikes to Bosnia, I wouldn't be in the United States. I'd be in a mass grave. So I don't think wars are inherently bad when they're fought against bad people.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. I would also contest that.
What does victory look like in Afghanistan?
A stable democratic government.
Okay. That's where you and I are going to have clarity, but not agreement tonight. The role of the United States military is not to institute democratic governments across the world. It's to protect the American people. That's mission number one. I want to get some other questions. Let me just ask one other thing, though. So I'm interested. Did I say anything in regards to the Chinese issue that you have never heard before with Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
No, I know about all of the issues. I just haven't really looked into the Confucius Institute stuff yet. But I'm waiting to see more stuff come
up. So I want to thank you for coming and asking these questions. I'm going to say this, though. When you look objectively at how Hunter Biden received cash payments from Chinese state bank oligarchs, the $2 billion, Joe Biden probably owning a 10% of a Chinese Communist Party company based on Tony Bobulinski, former business partner's own remarks, Joe Biden saying it's a good thing when China gets stronger. If you actually cared about holding China accountable, I think a fair reading of the facts, you'll realize that Joe Biden is a wholly owned subsidiary of our greatest enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. But I do want to thank you for your boldness in being here tonight, and I appreciated the conversation. Thank you. Okay.
I think we got time for one more.
Okay, well, one or two more.
Hi, Charlie. My name's Jacob. Do you mind if I add a small point to the diplomatic issue with the Chinese virus? He said it's a diplomatic issue calling it the Chinese virus, but why is left-leaning media, when they found a brand new strain of it from India, of the coronavirus, why are they now calling it the Indian coronavirus?
That's right.
Why is it okay to do that, but it's not okay to call it the Chinese virus where it originated from? So
no,
they're doing it for multiple different countries. It's not just India. They're doing it for everywhere that's got some type of mutation. But my question is, as you know, we've just lost our energy independence. We've been set back 60 years because Biden decided to close the pipeline. And now we're back in the Middle East doing God knows what, getting oil again when we shouldn't even be there in the first place. So one of the world's largest oil reserves was just found offshore in Vietnam. What do you think the chances of Biden getting his grubby little fingers in it and intervening and going to Vietnam and trying to do something with that? What do you think the chances of that are? And what do you think the outcome of that could be?
Well, probably low. I don't know. I mean, never put it past the neoconservatives who run our foreign policy to try to go declare war in another country. Yeah, I think that would be a huge mistake. But I think this, look, energy independence, what kept us out of wars and actually kept us safe. Donald Trump made us energy independent for the first time in American history, where we were exporting more oil than we were importing, which is a national security issue. And something we don't talk about enough. I can't comment on the Vietnamese issue in particular. But what I can say more than anything else is that the more that we explore our own assets here, the less we have to go explore them abroad. And we have been blessed in this country with oil and natural gas so abundant that we can export it to the rest of the world, make a ton of money, and employ our own citizens. We are now losing voluntarily our own energy independence for some environmental, radical, obscure, undefined agenda. And that's a bad thing for the country, bad thing for American workers, bad thing for tax revenue, so on and so forth. So thank you for your question. Thanks. I think we have time for one or two more. Yeah.
Hello, Charlie. So I have a question. I love markets, and I know you said you love markets just as me, and, you know, like the rest of the audience, because capitalism has brought a lot of great things to the world, and I don't think that's undeniable. So seeing how the world, you know, after especially the Paris Climate Agreement, has moved more towards green energy, like as a whole, you know, you had around, I think, 190 countries sign the treaty. The United States, right, obviously we care about our energy and independence. Obviously we have huge coal and oil and natural gas infrastructure that obviously I don't think anyone with the right mind would dismantle right now. But nonetheless, I think that the United States is kind of losing a chance to become competitive in the world by leading with green technology, because China is taking advantage of this vacuum. I mean, someone just talked about the Belt and Road Initiative, and that's basically what China's doing. Is it's disseminating all this technology to all these places. And I feel like America should be the one doing that. I feel like we should be the one taking the lead in the world, disseminating, you know, all this technology, getting these patents so then we can be competitive and we can, you know, be dominant, even more dominant.
So thank you. It's a, I think you're coming at it from the right place. I'd be curious to hear why you think we should be doing the green thing outside of the fact that China's doing it.
So why should we be doing the green thing? Well, there's several key reasons, obviously. Depending on what your opinion is on climate change, obviously, if you don't believe in climate change or if you see it kind of in a skeptic way, I'm not going to touch that conversation. But I don't think it's undeniable that, like, for example, if you look at like India, right, or if you go to parts of China that have a lot of coal, you see that they're very polluted. They're very dark, right? And I think pollution is very dangerous. And I know a lot of people around the world die from like air pollution. I think that's one, if we don't even want to address the climate change thing, I think it's a very convincing point.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, and we can stay away from the climate change thing. But you'd agree more natural gas is good because it's the most, it's the least pollutant of all fossil fuels by far.
Well, yeah, a natural gas in the interim would be the preferable thing because obviously, you know, I think coal is pretty bad. Unfortunately, I know that a lot of people in the United States have been coal miners historically, especially like in West Virginia where people really relied on it. But as we've seen, the market has been shifting. I think I read something that like 90% of coal industry has kind of like was losing its market capitalization. So I do believe that natural gas is a good in between.
Yeah. So I don't want to put you on the spot. What part of our grid do you think is green currently? Just take a guess.
If I had to take a guess at what part of our grid is green, it's probably California.
No. Like if out of 100%, what percentage do you think is green?
Oh, I think the United States relies on 5% or 10% of...
It's right around there. That's a good guess. So we're about 11% coal, about 22% petroleum. These are rough. And then a little bit less of that of natural gas. Here's the only concern I have with your question. We have to answer ask the question, what's the purpose of our energy plan? And it should always be to serve humanity and serve human beings, always. And so when we have cheap, affordable, and reliable energy that is able to transport people, power our hospitals, then we should be able to pursue that. The environmentalists want to go so far and shut down hydroelectric, something that you guys are very familiar with here because you get a lot of energy, obviously, from hydroelectric right down the street. So I guess we don't need to belabor it or prolong it. I was just very curious kind of where you're going after it. Here's my biggest problem with the green issue is that there's a lot of unanswered questions. Number one, you're not able to power an entire 21st century economy on solar and wind. It's not possible. Number two, you got to answer what you're going to do with all the batteries because that's a major issue, especially with these electric power vehicles. Number three, natural gas and nuclear are the best solutions to this. And you probably agree, but the environmentalists want to destroy those altogether. And there's a lot of different reasons for this. And I know we're running really short on time, but I think we have to be really careful about this rush to green because it could make us less competitive. And you have parts of the country that are so wholly dependent on cheap, affordable, and reliable energy. And yeah, one last point.
So I agree with you. Nuclear, I think nuclear, a lot of people are scared of it. You know, obviously you see Chernobyl, you see the 3 Mile accident, but nuclear is actually one of the best ways for us to reach energy independence, like entirely. Like it produces like not that many emissions and everything compared to petroleum. But I will say this. Well, you know, obviously a lot of these green technologies are going to be expensive in the very beginning, right? Because, you know, they're still in development. I know there's been some government subsidies overall, but maybe it hasn't really been enough. But I think if we're talking about cheap, affordable energy, like I've heard plenty of stories of people who don't have to use a grid anymore because they have solar panels in their house. You know, it's a very attractive thing. And I think it kind of takes away power from the government. If anything, it takes power away from a lot of institutions like the Nevada Energy and stuff.
I hear you. So I got it. I see where you're coming from. We've been blessed with such unbelievable natural resources and energy that are easy to transport, quite honestly, easy to convert to human flourishing. And I think not you, but a lot of people in the green movement, their intention is to try to actually set us backwards through a place where we would not be able to have access to combustible energy. But that's a different discussion for a different time. So I think that we're low on time, right? So I want to just end with this. Thank you, guys. Sorry, we ran out of time because we had a lot of fun. I want to thank all of you guys for coming tonight. Remember what I said, that this is not a spectator sport. You must be involved and engaged. Help our amazing Turning Point USA students. If you want to listen to us and if you guys want to subscribe to our show, You can do that, the Charlie Kirk Show, on all of your phones, which would be fun if we could beat Rachel Maddow in the podcast charts. That's always a fun thing to do when a whole room decides to get behind it. I want to thank you guys for coming tonight and stay engaged, stay involved. Our best days are ahead, and this is a time to be more active than ever. And so I want to just thank our amazing activists here. Keep gathering, keep the charm in the way you communicate. Stay on top of these issues with perseverance and be relentless. And again, we are going to win. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get behind the work we are doing to reach the next generation, it's charliekirk.com/support. God bless all of you. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.